Welcome to the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, where you'll get actionable tips and advice on major gifts, direct response fundraising, legacy giving, and much more from leading experts in the nonprofit sector. Now, here are your hosts of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, Andrew Olson and Roy Jones.
Good afternoon. This is Andrew Olson with the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast. I'm here today with my good friend and colleague, Roy Jones. Roy, good afternoon.
Hey, I am very excited about this session, Andrew. We're being visited by fundraising royalty today.
Yes.
I'm very excited about this interview.
So am I. So we have today for our listeners, Lisa Natero, and Lisa leads the development team at St. Mary's Food Bank, which she will tell you is the first food bank. I'm just so excited to have her here. Roy, you're right. She is fundraising royalty. Lisa, welcome to the show today.
You guys are silly. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. Really excited to chat with you guys and share some information with people today.
In addition to being the AFP Outstanding Fundraiser of the Year, tell us a little
for
about
Arizona.
Yourself.
Yeah, for Arizona, not the world, not yet.
Arizona's what counts though, right?
Sure. That's the only place where I've worked. So yeah, a little bit about myself. I don't have a degree in fundraising. Back when I graduated college in 1993, it didn't exist. So my degree actually was in advertising. I wanted to make sure that I stayed in the communications field because I'm not good in math, science, or foreign language. So my degree was in the communications field, and I fell into fundraising, actually. I applied for a job at the Phoenix Zoo, which is our local zoo here in the development office. I didn't even know what a nonprofit was. So just by luck, I just really, really got along well with the gal that was interviewing me, and we hit it off, and I got the job. And I was at the zoo for 6 years. I went to a museum for 4 years. I was in animal welfare for 10 years after that, and then food banking the last 8 years. So I might not have those numbers exactly right. Again, I said I'm not good at math, but I've been doing fundraising for 25 years, since 1993. So, yeah.
Wow.
That's it. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, talk to me about, it's really interesting, the journey. I guess it says something to the skills that you learn can really be brought across from one vertical to the next, from animal organizations to welfare, and then, of course, helping the homeless. It's really interesting that fundraising techniques. Talk about that. Tell us about
Sure.
your experience
well,
there.
You know, sure, it's really different. You know, my first couple of experiences, both at the zoo and at the museum, it was, I'm going to say value-based fundraising. It was, you know, become a member of the zoo and a donor of the zoo, and the more you donate to something like that, you get more experiences. You get to, you know, you get to be invited to a special event, or you get a discount, or as in the case of the zoo, you get free access. And then if you donate a higher dollar amount, maybe you get to go behind the scenes and see the animals' night houses, education programs for your kids. So going into animal welfare, so I had that for a good 10 years. And then going into animal welfare, after that was my first experience with philanthropic fundraising, raising money specifically for a cause. And it was very different, equally as great, but it was very different raising something for a cause, because it was about people doing this because it was in their heart and what they believed in, and they wanted to, in the case of animal welfare, they wanted to save animals, but maybe they can't save them all. So donating money to the animal shelters so that we could do surgeries and we could, you know, build better shelters and purchase food and things for the animals that we had there. And then, of course, you know, food banking, it's feeding people. And I've loved all of the jobs that I've had. But, you know, when you can go home at the end of the day saying, I worked really hard today, I raised some serious money, and there are going to be fewer kids going to bed hungry tonight as a result of it. Oh, there's just no better feeling than that, than to know that you've been successful in trying to achieve your organization's mission at the end of the night. But yeah, different strategies and tactics, and I know that we're going to get into some of those specific things that people can do regardless of the size or what kind of organization they have, things that can work kind of across the board. So yeah,
I'm curious, Lisa. So you've been at St. Mary's, is it 6 or 8 years now?
6 years. Six years here at St. Mary's.
Yeah. So in that time, I think I read somewhere, or maybe I heard on a recording, that you had raised and led the organization to raising like $120 million during that time period, which that's a huge number. So to your, you know, point, you said you're not great at math. You're maybe not counting it, but you certainly can raise it. I mean, that's a massive number. So Roy and I have been in this game for quite a while. We know what it takes to raise $120 million. And it's not just being a great fundraiser, right? It's also in a role like that, being a really good leader. Talk to us about how you are able to inspire an ongoing culture of philanthropy at that organization, because it's also not a small organization. And, sure. and specifically, sure. like, how do you develop and lead a team to hit goals like mm-hmm. that?
Well, it starts at the top. It starts with the CEO, and our CEO is amazing. He lets me boss him around all the time, which is great. He does an amazing tour of the food bank. I can do a great tour myself, but his tour is a little bit different, maybe a little more specific, talking about maybe some more numbers. And I'm like, look, pretty food. No, not really, but he, you know, he's got some more specifics there, but he really believes in fundraising and believes in donors and knows that it's the donors are what make this go around. You know, here at St. Mary's Food Bank, we are just a conduit between our amazing donors that, whether they're financial donors or food donors or volunteers, which are time donors, we are just a conduit between those donors and then the people that need the food. And so our board is not happy with mediocrity. They really push us and they support us. And just yesterday, I had three board members that were out here, and today, in fact, as well, I had board members that were out here helping us do tours with some high net worth individuals. And it's great. It's great that I have the support in that way, but it wasn't always like that. And it wasn't like that with every organization that I was with. It takes time. It takes time to build that within the organization, having board members that have the passion, but then also have the means and have the contacts and have the time, quite honestly, have the time and see the organization as important enough to come out and help us do those tours. So, you know, having some maybe retired professionals on the board that have a little bit more flexibility in their time to come out and help us is important. But then you asked me about the team, because the board doesn't raise at all. The board certainly has opened up doors for us to open up some opportunities for some really large gifts, but it's the staff. I have a great team, and it takes time to build that. Here in my role here at St. Mary's, fundraising falls under me. So does public relations and marketing and communications and the volunteer department, because quite honestly, a lot of our volunteers are companies, you know, corporate partners that are coming out to volunteer, and that's fundraising as well. So, and then food drives also falls underneath my area. So I've got kind of a big team. I'm going to say there's maybe 25 of us all together that are doing these tasks. So it takes time to build that great team. I've had turnover in different areas, and I've made job modifications along the way to fit people's skills. Here's the thing, though: you have a great staff member. They've got good ethics, integrity. They work hard, but maybe the role that you have them in isn't perfect for them. So along the way, I've made adjustments to make individuals more successful. No one wants to come to work and not be happy. Mm-hmm. And if somebody here isn't happy at the food bank, I want them to find their happiness. I want them to go where they want to go so that they can be happy, so that I can fill that role with someone that really wants to be here. Because if you're not happy in your job, you're not going to do a great job at it. And then at the end of the day, you're not raising money for the mission that you're, you know, that which is what caused you to join that organization in the beginning. But so if somebody is a great employee, but they're not really fit, let's say they're in the wrong seat on the bus, to quote Jim Collins' Good to Great book, put them on the right seat. I can teach people anything. I can teach somebody how to do a mail merge. I can teach them how to use the database. You know, those tactical things. Mm-hmm. But what you can't teach is integrity and work ethic. Mm-hmm. So if someone who has a great character attributes, if they're struggling, I work as hard as I can to make that fit for them so they can be successful. On the other side, I'll give you an example of a promotion that I did not too long ago. I had two staff members, and both these gals were hired with little to no fundraising experience. They came to the food bank kind of in a customer service role, assistant type work. They love the food bank. They're passionate about the mission. They had great customer service. When a donor would call and complain about, you know, oh, I'm getting too much mail. We never hear that, right, Andrew?
That never happens.
But when a donor would call to say, I'm getting too much mail, one of these, and here at our organization, we mail a lot. but we mail a lot because the numbers are there. The ROI is there. And that maybe that's a different podcast. but I would put one of these, I would put one of these gals on the phone to chat with them and explain why we send so many quote invitations to support. And 9 times out of 10, these gals could turn that donor around and at least keep them on our list to get our newsletter or maybe get them on a reduced mail schedule. But these gals were great. That's my point, is these gals were great, great at customer service. So then I hired a very expensive major gift officer who had years of experience as a major gift officer in an organization that was very different than a food bank. And she had no passion for our mission, and it showed. And she had a hard time rolling up her sleeves and, printing her own name tags for events that we had. And, you know, in social service fundraising, you roll up your sleeves. I set up booths and I move tables and I do all, you know, I do all of that stuff. So when it didn't work out with this major gift officer, I had a choice. And rather than replacing that position with another tenured major gift officer, I made the decision to give the two gals that had this great passion for the mission and were great with donors, I gave them both a small portfolio. So this isn't going to work every time, but it worked in this situation, and I'm thrilled about it, and I wanted to talk about it because it can work, and it did work in this situation. So I was able to create positions for people that were dedicated and had a great work ethic. But you know, for myself, what does it show about my leadership? I guess it shows that I'm nimble. Job descriptions aren't meant to be cast in stone. If someone has potential and wants them to grow, I want them to grow. And in my case, it's been great for the food bank. So in short, I think a great leader, one word that I would use to describe a great leader would be flexible.
Wow. Lisa, you know, you are so positive and so enthusiastic, and you just described your office as trying to be a happy place to work. Talk to me about how you keep that kind of attitude and as importantly, how you transfer that kind of attitude over to your team. When I know I've been in this fundraising business long enough to know that not every donor says yes, that we here know a lot. Talk to me about that.
It's the mission. It's the mission that keeps me motivated. Sometimes I get emotional. Sometimes I get choked up when I tell a story. But I'll tell you a story. A couple weeks ago, it was really cold out, and here at St. Mary's Food Bank, we are large enough. Let me just set the stage a little bit. There are 200 regional food banks in the Feeding America network, and St. Mary's Food Bank is among the top of them, among the largest food banks. So we're fortunate enough that while we give food to about hundreds of nonprofit organizations all around Arizona to give food to people in need, we also have a building right here on our campus where people can come and get food directly from us, people that live in the zip code. And so I'm fortunate in that way, but also in working at the animal shelter, there were animals there. So I put myself in close touch with the mission. And so last week I went over to our client building, and it was really, really cold. And I saw there was, cold Phoenix. It was 45 degrees, but it was really, really cold here, and it was raining, and there were people over there that were in line to get food, and there had to have been 100 people in line, and there were a couple ladies that I saw that were in flip-flops, and I can tell you, everybody knew it was going to be cold. It was cold when we woke up, and if there were another pair of shoes that these ladies would have had to put on their feet, they would have put them on their feet. And so to get yourself in touch with the mission and see the clients and talk to the clients, it just, you know, that's what keeps me motivated. And it's important to have playtime as well. And so we celebrate whenever we have a new staff member on board. We all take them out for a group lunch, and you know, I pay for that myself. And because it's important to develop that camaraderie easily, I'll share with you that, you know, with any fundraising team, you have different goals. Our grant writer has a goal every year, of course, but then also each month. And our direct mail program has a monthly goal, and our corporate giving has a goal, and food drives has a goal, and major gifts has a goal, and blah, 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 blah. Everybody has their goal. And so maybe, you know, 6 months ago or so, my grant writer came to me, and he was really in a bad way. And I'm like, you know, hey, what's going on? Are you okay? He's like, oh, I'm not going to make goal this month. And I said, I don't care. And I don't care that did you work as hard as you could this month? Did you submit the grants that you wanted to submit? Did you do what you wanted to do? Do you feel like you gave the organization your all that month? And you know, the answer to that, of course, is yes, because if it wasn't yes, you wouldn't be here. I'm not the easiest boss for people that don't work hard. But so he was bummed that he didn't make his goal. And I said, don't worry about it, because corporate giving maybe made its goal if you didn't this month, or the online program, or the direct mail program, or whatever major gifts. And so we all work as a team. And I explained to him, and I really believe this, that those, our goal, our monthly goals and our yearly goals are, you know, we kind of have to have them. But if you work hard every day, and every day you come to work and you're like, you know, what can I do? What innovative idea can I have? What can I call 5 extra donors today? And just stay motivated that way. As long as you're giving it everything that you've got, then that's okay. We have to have those numbers there. But I'm not maybe traditional. And so maybe this isn't going to be a popular thing to say, but I sit down with my fundraisers, and we sat down today for a couple hours and looked at our portfolio so that we can see who we wanted to lob off our portfolios, and then what new donors do we have from the fall that we could add on to our portfolio so that everybody had a manageable number. And I'm not that boss. I don't like the word boss. I like the word as coach or team leader or something like that. But I'm not that kind of a person that's going to say, you need to make 3 visits a week, or you need to make 100 calls in a week. I don't want to do that, because in my opinion, when you do that, people are going to make, I've had that in my experience to say, okay, you know, I need you to make X number of visits. And then, they're visiting the same person over and over again, or they're making the same call. Oh, left a message. Oh, left another message, left another message. People will work the numbers if you make it like that. And so I might not be popular, but I don't dangle a carrot in front of people to threaten them to do their job. They have to want to do it, but we make it fun. So we make it fun, and we celebrate wins. There's a lot. I'm looking around my desk right now. There's a lot of chocolate and a lot of different forms on my desk right now. If I'm not sitting at my desk, which is often, I'm usually out, you know, being a senior leader of the organization. My job is kind of split up into 3 different areas. One, I've got my own portfolio. One, I'm a mentor and a leader for my team. And then the third part is I'm a leader of the organization. So with that comes things, HR issues and budgets and board meetings and things like that. But when I am here, my door is open and my staff knows, come and chat with me anytime. And if you can't reach me, you know, if I'm not here, send me an email or send me a text message and I'll respond. I'm here for them, because so that we can all be successful.
Wow. I really like what I'm hearing, especially just, you know.
Well, I tell people, usually half my staff likes me a lot. But there's more than a couple that are like, oh, and I'm like, well, what can we do to get you back on track?
Well, but that kind of coaching, I think, is just so important, and giving people a lot of grace is so important. And because that's really what you're trying to assess, is whether they're really committed to caring for the donors in their portfolio and their caseload.
Right. Right. Yep.
Hey, Lisa, I'm curious. I was watching one of the videos that AFP, I think, had recorded with you. And I heard you say something about how important you think it is to engage children in philanthropy. Mm-hmm. I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about why you think it's that important, and how do you do it, and how do you recommend other organizations go about that?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you did. You watched my video, Andrew.
I did.
Engaging the younger generation is really, really important. And of course, I could say it's important because it's our duty to, you know, to get children involved in philanthropy at a young age. But I'm going to say also it's good for us because it's good for fundraising. So I'll talk about the kind of the philosophical way about that. And what I did myself as a mom, actually, always being in fundraising and working in nonprofits, but not having experience with that when I was little. But here's the funny thing. I want to stop for a second and say, when I took this job at St. Mary's Food Bank, my dad said, oh my God, I'm so excited that you're working for St. Mary's Food Bank. I've supported them your whole life. And I was like, what? And he goes, yeah. And in his home office, my dad works out of his office, in his home office, he opened his drawer that was pretty accessible to him and pulled out certificates that he received from St. Mary's Food Bank for his donations that he made back in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh my God, Dad, you supported the food bank. I can't wait to look you up in the database. and send you an appeal letter. But so even though my family did support nonprofits when I was growing up, and I wanted to make sure that my children knew about that, because I didn't necessarily understand about that. So what I did with my own children as a parent was, both of my boys, I gave them $4 a week for their allowance. And they had three jars, a spending jar, a savings jar, and a charity jar. And the reason why I had three jars and $4 was because they had to decide what to do with that extra dollar. You know, I mean, of course they could have done whatever they wanted with them. But my older son always put $2 in charity, one in spending and one in savings. And then with that money, we adopted a wolf one year, we bought toys for children through something that we have in Arizona. I don't know if it's nationwide, but it's a Christmas Angels program where you pick a child's name off the tree and you give them, you know, buy presents. I mean, I'm sure that concept exists, but I don't know if it's called that exact thing. And so we would do all sorts of different things there. But Andrew, what you heard on that video was when I was working at Arizona Humane Society and we were doing a telethon, a pet telethon, my son called in and made a $50 donation to the animal shelter with that money that he had in his charity jar. So I thought that was really good. And I was like, wow, I thought that was very cool. And it worked. So I've always tried to incorporate children into fundraising at every role that I've had. I think it's important for the child. It's important for our society, but it's also good for fundraising for the organization. When I was in animal welfare, I created kids' birthday parties. And what we did there was we would have, you know, I started this. And so that means I worked it, you know, as the chief development officer, I worked it and then got it up and going. And then I passed it off to somebody else. But where it was a 2-hour birthday party. And so they could come in a little room that we had and they, and we played games with them, like, you know, whatever, like word searches or whatever we had. We would have somebody bring a bunny in and pet the bunny. And then we would go out into the cages where the dogs were. And I had the kids stuff Kongs, which is like a big rubber thing for, solid, like a hollowed out rubber toy. And we would shove dog treats and dog food in there. And then every kid made a Kong. And then we went out there and they all got to decide what animal they wanted to give this Kong to. Mm. And then they would make posters for the animals that they liked. So, but I charged for it. So I got children out there to the animal shelter to see the animal shelter. Their parents had to come and pick them up and drop them off. And maybe they looked at animals while they were there and we made money on it. And it was a fun activity. At the food bank, we've created something called the Junior Hunger Heroes program. So for anybody that understands about food banking, children have to be 12 years old at the least, or at the youngest to volunteer. But what about those little kids? And so we created a program for that where kids as young as 3 years old could come in with their parents on a specific Saturday. We do them quarterly and they can do a volunteer activity that's not in the warehouse with everybody else, but it's in a separate area. And one time they counted out, like, you know, those soft soups, cup of soups or ramen soups. They put like 50 in a box. And another time we had bread that was in a big bin and they instead, but you know, if you can imagine 1,000 pounds of bread in a bin at the bottom, you've got bread pudding. And so we would have them count loaves of bread and, you know, have like, you know, 20 loaves of bread in smaller boxes. So easy things for kids to do. And of course it would take an adult volunteer a fraction of the time to do that. But the idea is to have an activity that kids can do. And then an activity that where the kids can be involved. And so they'll grow up, you know, early childhood memories stay with people. And I think that they may be more likely to give or at least have more favorable thoughts about an organization if they were involved as, you know, as children. And, you know, also getting the kids involved means that the parents are going to follow. And then, you know, the parents are the ones that are going to write the check while the kids are there, you know, doing the activity. So, but also, I mean, we live in a bubble and everyone thinks that what happens to them is normal. And I know my boys thought that. They thought that what happened to them was normal. When I drove them down to an animal shelter, driving through a neighborhood that was, you know, not as nice as our neighborhood, and seeing their looks on their faces when they're like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, not everybody lives like how you live, honey. And so I think that what happens to us, we think that everybody happens to everybody. So to expose children is important. But again, those two things, early childhood memories stay with people, and then maybe they'll support you in the future. And, you know, where the kids are, the parents will follow.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I love the idea of engaging them in the mission of the organization. I think, to your point, Lisa, I think it also just, like, it hopefully creates just a more compassionate society so that in the future, we're not all scrambling to find that one volunteer or that one donor, but more people who were exposed as kids are raising their hands and saying, okay, I'm going to jump into this too because I enjoyed it and I now understand the value of doing something like this. So I think it's a really cool thing to do.
Yep.
Very good. Excellent. Just you're just chock full of information. I mean, it's really interesting to think about your career track and, you know, and then to hear you coaching younger people in, you know, in this career of philanthropy. What's your feeling about aspiring young fundraisers? What do you see in the future? I mean, is this going to be something that is, you know, part of our industry forever? Is it a great career track for young people moving into development?
Oh, well, I think so. Of course, I'm biased. It's the only thing that I've ever done. But, you know, fundraising it's getting more fun for me as I'm going along. I feel like donors want more engagement. Okay, again, this is me. I'm not speaking on, you know, behalf of, this is just me thinking, but donors want more engagement and fewer galas and golf tournaments. And I cringe, and hopefully you're not going to get hate mail for that, but I'll tell you what, I've done galas and I've done golf tournaments. And for me, for the organization where I am right now, we don't have to do that. And so we think of more creative ways to get donors involved. And more donor engagement, I think, is really important. The advice that I would give to aspiring fundraisers, young fundraisers in their career, is be creative. Think outside the box. It doesn't have to be a gala. It doesn't have to be a walk. It doesn't have to be a golf tournament. You know, get creative with it. I've got a team of young people here that are doing really unique things with companies and with millennials and, dare I say, bar crawls, pub crawls. Those are, you know, and it's getting people together to do the interesting things that they want to do. And doing it for a cause. So take the Oscars, for example. You could do something with the Oscars for a company. And you could say to have people do, you know, like March Madness, when they do something where they're, you know, people are betting and it's that, you know, you've got the sheet of paper and you're bidding on different things. And do that, a company can do that for themselves or have like a pot and half the money, like a 50-50 raffle kind of, but in an organization. And half the pot goes to the winner, but then the other half of the pot goes to a charity. And so, you know, with the Oscars and March Madness, those are the two things that we're doing right now. But then other things that we're doing that are just creative with donor engagement is invite donors out to your organization for a tour if you can. We do a lot of events, and I'm not particularly a fan of the word friend-raising event. I think it's maybe a little bit overused, but not a fundraising event. We're not a fee-based event. So what we'll do in that area, and these are fun, where, you know, we'll get a restaurant, whether it's related to maybe a board member knows somebody that can open up a back room of their restaurant. We did one of them in a public use area. It was a Frank Lloyd Wright property that the owners of this property would like to use it for weddings and private use events. And so we connected with them and they gave us use of this, knowing we're going to bring our high-end donors to the event. And these high-end donors may have children that are getting married and may have businesses where they want to have a company event. So it was valuable for them. So they gave us the use of that space for free, along with the catering. And then we, you know, honestly, we paid for the bar in that situation. But then we invited our top donors out, and it's a mix and mingle event. And we chatted with our donors, and we don't ask them for a dollar. It's not fee-based, and we don't ask for money at the event. But I make sure that all of my fundraising officers are there, and all of my board, well, as many of my board members as are available to come that night. And they know who's there. We make, here's a tip. Have name tags where you can actually read the person's name. You know, fill up the space. What, 12 points? Oh, who can read that? I can't read it in front of me. So as big as possible, their first name as big as possible, their last name half the size, but gigantic name tags. And then take pictures like crazy at the event so that you can have those photos and put those photos in the donor's record and in your database, and so that you recognize, you know who they are. But just these mix and mingle events. And then we have our CEO. So everybody's chatting with everybody. And then the CEO gives gives a little presentation, not with PowerPoint slides, but just talking, just standing in front of the room and just talking about the future of the organization and taking questions from people. And, you know, maybe planting a couple questions here and there. And usually he looks over at me and he's like, Lisa, what question do you have? I'm like, well, Tom, nice of you to ask. I'd like you to talk about blah, 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 so that we can make sure that he gets his points in there. But so just being creative, you know, it's, if golf tournaments work for an organization, that's great, but they, you know, maybe I'm not good at it, but they've never done a great job for me. And so I've had to think of other creative ways to do it. And it's fun. It's a lot of being creative like that's a lot of fun. So
Lisa, I'm going to ask you a couple of maybe what might be controversial questions. What do you say?
Okay. I'm ready if you are, Andrew.
what do you say to the organization that says, no, I don't think we're going to invest our time and effort in those sort of things because we have a direct mail program and we raise enough money with that?
What introduced me to that board that says we have a direct mail program? So this is what I say about direct mail, because actually I'm going to change your question around if I may.
Sure.
I've been a direct mail advocate, and you know this. Direct mail is part of my responsibility for my very first job in 1993 at the zoo, when we would get an 11% response on a renewal package and a 2% response on acquisition. Those were the days. But what I would say is that fundraising, and I made this up, so I'm not stealing it from anybody, and anybody out there can steal this. Fundraising is like a recipe for making cookies. You need a lot of different things for it. And I will say that direct mail is the flour. But you also need sugar, and you need brown sugar, and you need salt, and you need chocolate chips. And that's all of those things come together. So I would say if I were going to attach a recipe and draw a line to all these different things, I would say that these mix and mingle events where you're meeting donors, those are the chocolate chips. Those are the times when you're always looking for the chocolate chip and a chocolate chip cookie, but those, you're looking for that. You're looking for that time to engage with a donor, to get that one-on-one experience. And if you'd like a homeless shelter or a food bank or something like that, donors might be a little nervous, to be honest with you, to come down and see that face-to-face. It might hurt their heart a little bit, and they may not be likely to do that. They want to support, but they kind of want to support from afar. So that's where those mix and mingle events come in. But it's a chocolate chip cookie recipe, and I stand by that. And you need all these different things to make it work. But I do believe direct mail is the flour, for sure.
Well, that makes sense to me, but now I'm hungry for chocolate chip cookies.
Right. I'll make you some. I actually make great chocolate chip cookies.
Well, there you go. You heard it right there, folks. Okay, next question. When you were talking about your events, you said that the way that you described engaging with the organization, that the facility, was that you were looking for a win-win. I often hear, and I'm sure Roy hears this too, organizations take the posture of, well, you know, we do good work in the community, so they should just want to work with us.
Talk they sure should.
A little bit about that exchange of value, though, and how you get your team to think about that. And really, where I hear it most is with the boards. Talk to me about how you get the, you know, your team and your board to understand that it is often a two-way street, and that value isn't just something you extract from supporters, but something you have to give them as well.
Sure. Well, I just think it's, honestly, I don't have a great answer for that. I think it's communication. I go into my board meetings with facts and figures. And, you know, we've got some opportunities here in Arizona with something called a charitable tax credit that other organizations don't have. I won't even talk about it because everybody will be very jealous. But people can make a donation to the food bank and take that right off of their taxes. A lot of organizations qualify for this in Arizona, so that certainly helps us out. If I had board members, which I don't, nope, not a one, that thought just because we have it, that's why people give, not one of my board members thinks that. But if they did, which they don't, I would go into that meeting and say, okay, so we do an email campaign to email our donors to let them know about this. And this is what's the exact response from getting that email. And we do keyword searches online. So when someone types in a certain word, an ad pops up, and then that, if they click that ad, it goes to the website, which links right to the donation that they made. And so I link it, and I show them that the marketing efforts that we do how that results in donations. And even to the extent of these mix and mingle events that I talk about, I go to the board and I talk about that. When I have my quarterly development committee meetings, I'll talk about that and say, hey, we had this event last fall. So many of you were there. Hey, did anybody get to meet John Smith? Oh yeah, three of them got to meet John Smith. Hey, well, let me let you know that 2 days, maybe not 2 days, maybe 2 weeks after, or the next time John Smith received his direct mail piece, he increased his donation by XYZ. So it takes research, it takes time, it takes curiosity. And that's the key. You have to be curious. As a development officer, you have to be curious enough to want to dig in and look into your database and learn those details and track it. Track everything that you're doing so that you can, if you track that you have this event here's who came to the event, or even these people were invited to the event, but they didn't come. I'll give you an example. We had a donor come in, and the donor gave, every year the donor gave a certain amount of money, and it was a very nice amount of money. I don't want to say the amount because it was a big amount, but so they gave a nice amount of money. But we invited them to everything throughout the year, all the different, we do a lot of behind the scenes tours, and we do bus tours where we will have, we're fortunate enough to have a bus actually, because we have inmate labor. So we've got a bus that goes and picks them up and brings them to the food bank to work for us. So we're lucky enough to have that. We will have our bus go out to a location close to where our donors live in a certain area, in a certain geography, and they could park at a local grocery store that's a partner with ours, park in that parking lot at a specific day and time, and we will bring them down, drive them down here in a bus, all of them together so they feel nice and safe, down to the food bank and give them a tour. And we have these events, and so we track all of this, and so we invited this donor to all of these different events that we had, the mix and mingle events and blah, 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 blah. And they gave a certain dollar amount every year for the last 5-6 years I've been here. And she called and said, I want to come down and make my year-end gift. I want to make it in person. Are you there? Yep, sure, we're here. So she came down, and the gift that she gave us, I'm not going to say the amount, but the gift that she gave us was 10 times. Wow. 10 times the gift that she gave the year before. So if it was a $100 gift, it was a $10,000.
Yeah, that's huge.
So it was a big, big difference. And what she said was, I feel so bad that I haven't come to all of these things that you've invited us to. We know that you're doing such great work and you're inviting us to these. We promise to be better, and we're going to try to come down here to your events. But so even inviting people to an event is important to track that. But it's the curiosity and tracking it. And then sharing that with your board members. So I told you I wasn't going to have a good answer, and then I talked for a really long time. So,
Andrew, I think this has been great. I mean, I think just to see the enthusiasm, and I like the unique way that you apply fundraising to your work in food banks. It's interesting to have seen just your conversation about how you integrated children into the programs early on when you were at the zoo, and then in the animal welfare organizations, and now in the food bank program. It's just really interesting to see some of those same techniques and passions being carried over from one vertical to the next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I know that we're wrapping up soon. There's something I want to talk about, if I may, a great idea that doesn't work well in Arizona, which is where I live. And I joke around okay. And I say that just because I'm in Arizona, and I don't want other people to steal it. But
well, this is the place. This yeah, is the
well,
place.
It can't be your special tax credit, because that really only works in Arizona. So.
That's true. But something I want to share, if I may, and something that we did just recently, but we've been doing it for 6 years since I've been here. And this comes from, Andrew, this comes from a friend of ours, I'll say, I'll use her first name, not her last name, but I'll tell you the story how this came about. December is very, very busy, and we didn't have a lot of time to thank our donors meaningfully in December of this specific year. So January comes, and I'm talking to my contact at the direct mail company that I was working with, and I'll just share her name with Kim. And so I was sharing with her, like, I have so many donors that are high-level donors. I didn't get a chance to meaningfully thank them in December, and I feel bad. I'm worried I'm going to lose them. And she had this idea, what if you send them a Valentine's Day card? And I thought, oh, my gosh, that's a great idea. Not with an ask, just a Valentine's Day card. And so I kind of took that idea and ran with it. And so I would encourage any organization that has children as part of their mission. If children are, if you're serving children, and I'll tell you what we did here at the food bank, is we have an after-school kids program where kids in after-school programs, kids that are living in poverty and after-school programs can get a meal from St. Mary's Food Bank. And we do about 8,000 of them every single day. And it's a big part of our kids' nutrition program. And so these children that are in these after-school programs, we went to these different sites with red construction paper and pink construction paper and stickers and markers and little heart foam things. And we encouraged the children to make a Valentine's Day card for their mom or dad or somebody special in their life. But then would they help us out at the food bank, and would they make a second Valentine's Day card for the generous donors that help provide the food for them?
So we
did that. And so we sent original art. If it had like a little puffy thing, you could see it was original art and crayons, and they weren't all great, I'm going to tell you. And things were spelled wrong, and, you know, it's like, thank you for the food. My favorite food is blah, blah, blah. And it's hilarious the number of different ways kids will spell peanut butter and jelly. Like, there's a lot of D's when they're spelling it. But we did that, and I've got two thank you note emails that I received that I just want to read to just punctuate the fact that donors, I've got three actually, that donors loved this. I have an email in front of me, and I printed them out from an elderly lady that said, thank you so much for the thoughtful Valentine's Day card. I haven't received a Valentine in 50 years. Huh. I will cherish this Valentine's Day card from, and then she puts the little gal's name that wrote it, thank you, which I thought was just amazing. Then another person said, I wanted to reach out and let you know I almost cried when I got my Valentine's Day card. It chokes me up to think that a child in need is thanking me for the food that they receive. You can count on me for annual donations into the foreseeable future. And then this last one says, I received a Valentine's Day card. It included a candy game. I'm not sure what that was. Drawn with crayons and adorned with stickers. It appears it was though Lowell, they just put the child's name, signed it. I have to say, this is by far the most touching thank you card I've ever received. Crafted and coming from the child, it genuinely displays a tremendous amount of gratitude. Thank you, and St. Mary's Food Bank for sending it. So, I mean, for someone to send me a thank you note for sending them a thank you note, and we received like a couple dozen of them, which was great. And so, yeah, maybe 3 years down the line, everyone's going to be doing it. But right now, I'm the only one that I know is doing it. So I would encourage any organization that's got children as part of their mission to maybe take a stab at that next year.
It's just, it's a brilliant move. I mean, it's so authentic. And to your earlier point, like, what better engagement tool do you have than bringing your donors so much closer to the families and the kids that their gifts are helping to feed? I mean, it's kudos to Kim and to you and your team for executing it, and to the kids for making it happen. I mean, it's super smart.
It's fun. Just today we were talking, I had my fundraisers meeting, and we were talking, and everybody's talking, and everybody saw a light bulb go off in the top of my head. And I said, oh my gosh, I just had a great idea. And Susan, my development manager, goes, I hate when you say that. I'm like, no, but I mean it. I mean, I've got this great idea. And then I went on, and I don't even remember what it was, actually, now that I'm chatting on the phone about it. But I was very excited about it. Whatever it was, somebody took notes, and I think we're going to investigate it. It had to do with corporate giving. So, I know. It was corporate donors. You know, we send a certificate, and we send a thank you, and sometimes we do a plate. But I thought, let's bring them a trophy. Something big, you know, like with a big score, something that can't get mailed, that they're going to have to do something with it, you know, like a big box, like a big wooden box about maybe 4 inches by 4 inches with a can on top of it, or something very 3D that they can't get mailed, that they'll be forced to put in their lobby. So yeah, that was my idea.
Well,
this was fun.
Just close to wrapping up. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. It's been a great conversation. I have one last question that I'm just curious if you could share with our listeners. You know, in your career, who's the, like, could you point to any one person or a couple of people who have, you know, made the most meaningful impact on your career as a fundraiser and what you learned from them?
Well, who's made the biggest impact on my career? I may not answer this question the way that you're thinking I'm going to answer it. It's my dad. Honestly, it's my dad. My dad has such a strong work ethic. When I was a child, he worked 3 jobs. He had a full-time job during the day, and then at night, or in the morning rather, he delivered newspapers. And on the weekend, he worked in a He worked in a fitness center passing out towels. And then at night, he went to night school at ASU to get his degree. And just what a strong work ethic he had. And, you know, today he's very successful. He's a very a successful self-made man. Nothing was handed to him. He worked hard for every dollar he made. And I'll say that work ethic has stuck with me. So wherever I am, I give my job everything I have. If I get to the point where I say I have to go to work, not I get to go to work, then it's time for me to start looking around to find another opportunity. I believe if we're not thrilled with our jobs every day, it's going to show. If you're not giving your job 100%, then you know who's affected by that is your organization's clients. So don't do that to them. Don't do that to the organization. You know, if you're not happy, move on. So they can find somebody that will be happy in that role, and you can find a place where you'll be happy, and so that, you know, clients can be better served. So my dad has been the guiding star. And then of course him telling me that, you know, he supported St. Mary's Food Bank didn't hurt at all. But on another basis, we learn from everybody. You know, I learned from previous bosses that I've had, both good and bad. I've learned from bosses that weren't, I've actually been fortunate that I've had only great bosses, but other people that were in leadership roles around the organization. It starts at the top. And if you have somebody that's not committed and not willing to give their all and kind of skate by, it impacts everybody. It impacts morale. I can't name a specific person because I would be so afraid to leave so many people out.
No, it makes sense. And I got to tell you, hearing you talk about your dad, I now completely understand who you are, because that work ethic just exudes from you. So it makes a lot of sense now. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
If someone has questions for you, wants to, you know, give you a call or shoot you an email to follow up on something from the podcast, what's the best way for them to get hold of you?
Absolutely. I would love them to email me. And my email is is L-A for Lisa Ann, L-A Notaro. So L-A N-O-T-A-R-O at firstfoodbank.org. Or if people connect with me on LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn, Lisa Notaro, I'm on LinkedIn, and they can connect with me that way. And then we can start the conversation there. If you can't remember, my middle name is Ann.
Awesome. So,
well, yeah, Lisa, I would love to connect with you. I love, you know, I've been doing fundraising for 25 years and I have great ideas and I want to share them. We're all trying to help, help in all the different ways that we do. I love to chat with people and give them lots of ideas. And I've got about 100 other ideas that I didn't share today. So, Well,
there you go, folks. If you need 99 more ideas, give Lisa a shout, send her an email. And, you know, again, the proof is clear. You know, you have had not just a long career, but an incredibly successful career. So super, super appreciative that you came on the show today and really grateful for what you've shared with us.
Thank you.
Lisa. Thank you so much. Yeah. My it was my absolute honor and pleasure.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Rainmaker Fundraising Podcast, brought to you exclusively by Newport One. Newport One can make a difference in your fundraising, so that you can change the world. You can always reach us at podcast@newportone.com. Please take a moment to rate this episode on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. When you rate this episode, it will help more nonprofit leaders just like you to help find us and get the information that they need to raise more funds for their organization. Thanks again for listening today.